The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Hopefully, we have fixed our audio problems that have taken up the first couple minutes. We're talking about the Indiana Wake Forest postgame show. We'll get TJ back here in a second. And hopefully it'll work out. So we're having some issues. If we're continuing to have issues, we'll just end the show early. Hopefully we can figure it out. If not, we'll start a new show and call and get people back in. So last week, Indiana suffered a 33-28 defeat at the hands of Wake Forest. It was a weird game in terms of you had a quarterback that TJ, can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm good. Yep.
Excellent. I think we figured it out. Technical difficulties for the first couple of minutes. Hopefully we don't lose any listeners, and we'll put a note on that when we put the podcast out. But anyway, the game, a loss, a 33-25 or 28 defeat at the hands of Wake Forest. It was to me, a weird game, TJ. You know, you had a quarterback who threw five interceptions, yet set the school record for most passing yards in a game with 496. There's a lot to take away that you don't like and a lot to take away that you do like. The defense only gave up 27 points. 28 points. 27 points because they went for two and missed it. But, you know, they held them to 350 yards of offense. The defense is put in a lot of bad positions because of the turnovers. Yes. What are your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, I think, the first thing that comes to your mind is weird, frustrating, missed opportunity. I leave that game feeling very confident that Indiana is a better team than Wake Forest, but did not deserve to win the game because of the mistakes they made. The five turnovers are obvious, and in addition to that, the penalties. You're not going to win a game against a competent opponent when you turn the ball over that much and give them first down multiple times in a drive to them scoring a touchdown. It was unfortunate because I thought that particularly the first face mask penalty on that Wake Forest, ultimately the drive that ended up putting the game away for them. The first face mask penalty was a complete phantom call. I still have no idea what they were calling there. Then you had another face mask that one was a bit more obvious. So, you can't say it was all just poor officiating. I think Indiana made some mistakes there, but it's frustrating to have that occur to the defense when Indiana had gotten back into the game. But I think the defense was put in a lot of bad situations. You're 100% correct there. I think the defense played well enough to win that game. Credit to Wake Forest for doing some good things on offense. But I think the defense did a pretty good job, and Wake Forest just made enough plays on offense to get it done. Overall, it's strictly down to five turnovers.
And I think a lot of it comes down to, including turnovers, IU couldn't get a running game going. They had 116 yards in the game. they were missing their entire right side of the offensive line. All-American Dan Feeney missed the game with, you know, the lingering concussion. And, you know, Dimitri Camille missed the game with a back thing, as Kevin Wilson calls it. That sounds like, you know, some gross, you know, medical thing. But, you know, hopefully those
good.
Two are back.
Injuries linger, so.
Yeah, hopefully those
probably
two
not
are back.
Gonna, yeah.
You hope. Hope it's something
yeah, I mean, they
like back spasms where, you know, he just couldn't go that week and he could come back. But, you know, you're going to need those two this week coming up against a very strong Michigan State team. But I think, to me, you know, going into the season, TJ, we talked about run efficiency and Devine Redding. And we saw it last year where he struggled against Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan and Michigan State. He didn't get that many carries, and that's where Jordan Howard was so good at getting that extra yard, hitting the hole with authority, and, you know, keep churning out those yards. And, you know, chalk some of it up to missing your, you know, two-fifths or 40% of your offense, and Jake Bailey being hobbled for most of the game. You know, Devine Redding's got a hole a little bit better. And have a little bit more burst. Saw Cole Guest. Hopefully he's back again this week. He hit, you know, the hole with a burst, and you know, he was, you know, an arm tackle from break one of those long runs. But, you know, there are a lot of concerns coming out of this game in terms of play calling. You know, I thought with 58 seconds left in the first half, down 21-7, you had decent field position. And three timeouts. And it's not like the NFL where a minute is more like 35 seconds. You know, clock stops on the first on first downs. And Wake Forest, they'll probably give you a little bit underneath in terms of throwing the ball. But, you know, they came out with, and it seems like this is the typical Indiana end of the half offense. They came out with little urgency, ran the ball twice, took a timeout with 3 seconds left for whatever reason. And just instead of trying to steal 3 points, you know, go into the half with a little bit of momentum. They didn't get it done. They went to, you know, they didn't move the ball. They ran the ball, and instead of it being a 21-10 game, they ended up kicking the ball to Wake Forest. I believe it was 24-7. They stopped him on the first drive, and then, you know, Wake Forest got a field goal, making it 24-7. And, you know, it's the crowd left, and we'll get to that in a little bit anyway. But to me, the play calling, and then at the end of the second half, with about 6 minutes left, they're running. I know Wake was playing farther off the ball, and IU is taking what they're giving them. But having Devine Redding run 4 yards at a clip, and he doesn't have, he's not going to break big runs against Wake Forest. You know, where is Mike Majette? Where is Devontae Williams? Where are these guys who could, you know, have the home run threat to break a run if you're going to run? Otherwise, you know, I thought they got too conservative on offense. There on the last drive took too much time, especially with no timeouts, and ultimately it cost them. I mean, it was a minor miracle that IU lost by 5 points, and with 11 seconds left, they're lining up for, you know, an onside kick, or if you recover it, you're a Hail Mary away from, you know, winning the game. But yeah, to me, a lot of things have to change going into this week, and we'll get to that in our pregame podcast later in the week. But to me, it was just a head-shakingly frustrating loss. But it's not a season ender. It's not one that puts you behind the chains a little bit and erases your margin of error. But it's not a season wrecker. You still have winnable games on the schedule. You just have to win those games. Plus, the offense didn't look, aside from the interceptions, you know, they looked all right. They put up 611 yards on this team. That's a very good defense, and they start the year 6-0. So, you know, a lot of people jumped off the bandwagon on Saturday. It takes a lot of the lust off of this week, especially Michigan State losing as well. But you know, what we know about Kevin Wilson's teams is that they usually follow up a stinker like this with their best effort.
That's your hope. I mean, I think it was really, really weird. It's a really weird stat line, and more importantly, just weird to consider. Any game is going to be taken as, okay, what do we take from that moving forward from an analysis standpoint? For the offense, we kind of came into it with, can the passing game continue to – or start to really generate big plays? You know, we saw a couple of big plays to Nick Westbrook the previous week, previous game against Ball State, but overall there was a lack of big plays in the passing game. So it was a question of, all right, is the passing game still going to be able to generate big plays? And we saw that in spades. I mean, we had talked about kind of the disappearing act from Ricky Jones in those first 2 weeks. Well, I mean, he showed that there's really no need to be worried about his production at all. He was fantastic. They were unable to cover him. Mitchell Page and his involvement, he was really good. Nick Westbrook was great again. I mean, he looks like a star receiver, not in the future, but, you know, maybe right now. So I think that that's something you can take away from it in the positive. And then Richard Lego, he showed you all the things that would make you very excited about this passing game. He showed you the ability to fire some bullets into tight windows when they need to be put there on slant patterns and out routes. He showed you the ability to hit the deep ball, which we were concerned about in that first game where he overthrew things. He also showed you reason to be somewhat concerned, and that's, you know, the interceptions. Now, to be fair to Lego, and I think some of the criticism he's taken has really discounted the fact that not all of those interceptions were his fault.
No, and Wilson is talking right now in Bloomington and about the turnovers, and he said that, you know, he thinks that four of the five interceptions are not Legault's fault, and Wilson's taken the blame for the last one and said it was a greedy play call on his part. On that, which, you know, you're protecting him a little bit, and he called the biggest mistake Lego
should.
Made. Yeah. The biggest mistake Lego made was the unsuccessful penalty that put him behind the chains with the chance to,
yeah,
to make a drive,
yeah,
down the field and score the ball touchdown and take the lead. To me, that, I could hear it in your voice when you sighed, talk about it, but to me that play was just everything boiled over. It looked like it could have been a late hit out of bounds. He had already thrown, you know, four or the fifth pick, and, you know,
and
everything
was just had that drive on defense where four penalties for, was it 45 yards, 46 yards, something like that?
Yeah,
four penalties for a ridiculous number in one drive.
Yeah,
had just been called. So
yards.
I understand the frustration for sure. And
yeah,
I do agree with Wilson that not all of those interceptions were his fault. I mean, the first one in the interception, the end zone to Luke Simeon, a real game changer, chance to go up by 14 points early, really hit him in the mouth. That ball came in real hot. Could Simeon have caught it? I don't know. I guess initially I thought, well, that hit him in the hands. Upon replay, it hit him in one hand, and that was because he extended to get it, and it was a bullet. I mean, it would have been an incredible catch, but, you know, unfortunate deflection, ball gets tipped up into the air. Typically bad things happen, and that's what occurred. The one to Westbrook, Westbrook should have caught that ball. It's the one mistake Nick Westbrook had on the day. Bates picks it off, runs it back. Again, unfortunate deflection, and when the ball goes up in the air, bad things happen. He overthrows Ricky Jones across the middle. That one, I believe that's the one that got deflected a little bit at the line of scrimmage. Another one, he got hit as he was throwing it. So
yeah, running back or a tight end missed a block, and the guy just came unblocked and hammered him. So,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of them are, like, you know, the word of the day is weird.
I mean, credit to their defense, right? Credit to their defense because they made the plays every time they had an opportunity to on defense.
Yeah, I mean, how many times
Indiana shredded their defense for over 600 yards, which I don't know if anybody else in the country or anybody else on their schedule is going to put up more than 600 yards on them.
Well, maybe Florida State.
That's impressive. Okay, well, Louisville probably will if they want to. But, you know, not very many teams are going to do that to them, and only elite offenses are going to do that to them. Now, Wake Forest will take it because they won the game, they scored a touchdown on defense, and they forced those turnovers. So, you know, they'll take it as a trade-off, but I think you have to be encouraged about that aspect of it, about the yardage, which tends to be replicable. I mean, you know, your yards over the course of a season, best offenses tend to end up with the most yards. Now, if Indiana continues to make the kind of, you know, turnovers that we saw, and it becomes more than a one-week thing, you know, then you start to consider, well, okay, what do we need to do differently on offense? And the answer right away is, well, we need to have better balance. You know, you can't have Legault being forced to throw the ball as much as he had to on Saturday. Like you said, part of that's down to the linemen not being there. So big picture, I think you need to look at, number one, are the turnovers going to continue? I don't think so. I think we'll see that cleaned up, and I don't think we'll see this offense be that sloppy again the rest of the year. I certainly hope not. And then number two, can the balance return to this offense when they take on good defense? You know, are they going to be able to be a balanced offense, which is the goal? And I think it would certainly make for a more I think it would help the defense a lot, as we talked about. You know, the better you can run the ball, the less time your defense is going to be on the field. And I think it would help the passing game be more efficient and less turnover prone, obviously, if Lego's not having to chuck it around as much as he did on Saturday. So those are kind of the big picture questions, and it's you'd like to have those questions after a win, find a way to come out with a close one, even though you played pretty poorly, but that unfortunately didn't happen.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of things went wrong. It was just, you know, a copper on a bad week for IU football overall. But this is it's a game where, you know, usually the first get loss of the season, you know, we're thinking, you know, it's over, you're comparing it to Rutgers last year, and I'm guilty as anybody of doing that. But, you know, coming out of that game, you didn't feel awful.
You felt
putting up 611 yards total. Yeah, you just felt like, you know, that was a weird game. You know, if we didn't throw five picks, and listen, I'm a Jets fan. They turned the ball over eight times yesterday. It was not a good week for quarterbacks that I root for. Awful week. I don't understand how you turn the ball over eight times and you thought five was bad. But anyway, it's, you know, a game that you have to take the good with the bad. You know, as I tweeted out earlier, you know, on Sunday after the game, there was the Nuke LaLouche stat line, you know, where LaLouche struck out 18, a new league record, also walked 18, a new league record. And you have Legault setting a Memorial City record and the school record for passing yards. So it's – will he throw five interceptions again? You hope not. I think it'll happen. Will he throw picks again? Probably, because everybody does. But, you know, they're going to – this is their guy. If there was ever a time to pull your quarterback, it was last week. You know, and it – just, hey, it's not your day. We're going to go with somebody else. But he threw for nearly 500 yards. And to me, you know, you had all these fans clamoring for Xander Dion. I believe there were rumors of a Peyton Ramsey chant in what was left of the student section in the second half. But, you know.
Peyton Ramsey? What?
I don't get it. Ramsey might be a nice player in the future, but he's going to redshirt this year, and you know what you have in Diamant. He's a guy with a career, you know, 48% completion percentage. He has one career touchdown throw. You really think that he would solve that problem? And, you know, it wasn't a mobility issue on Legault's part. Would you have liked to see maybe Austin King come in? Maybe, but Legault was playing, you know, he wasn't throwing five interceptions for, you know, 110 yards and his completion percentage was in the 30s. He completed,
right.
I think, above 50% of his passes with three touchdowns
and long throws.
No, they were not easy throws. And so, you know, people need to pump the brakes on Xander. You know, he's not the answer to your turnover problem. The answer is making better throws, having guys not miss assignments on blocks, catching the ball when it comes to you, and maybe not trying to force things. And understanding, maybe putting a little touch on it, like Timmy and throw. If you throw that a little softer, a little lower, that's a touchdown. And the game that, you know, the game is 14-0 instead of 7-7 and then 14-7. But to me, you know, there's a lot of issues to clean up. One of them on special teams, another blocked kick. That's 2 in 3 weeks. And it was another guy that was unblocked, and people will talk about the timing of it. The guy was unblocked, and the right wing on the field goal protection didn't even make a move to make this guy go out and kind of, you know, to steal a baseball term, to the banana around that edge. And then, you know, against Ball State in the punt, they just missed a block too. So those are two areas that need to be cleaned up as well. What I did like to see, I liked the Tyler Nitti and Clyde Uton package. I didn't really like it on fourth down and one. I thought that, you know, there's no margin for error. It's the first time you're running for this, and flashbacks of Chris Covington against Bowling Green came back. But you know, it worked well in the red zone. It worked well getting that touchdown. And, you know, if you want to kick that as the first non-quarterback rushing touchdown of the year, I guess you could count that. But, you know, it was good to see them open the playbook a little bit. Good to see that Nate and Clyde Newton, that package, I think, will be exciting to watch. And, you know, just cleaning up these are fixable mistakes. This isn't a lack of talent. It isn't, you know, these are things that, you know, you go back and go back to the tape, go back to practice and clean that up. They're fixable, and that's what's encouraging.
I think that, well, we don't know 100% that they are fixable. A couple of the things that I'm not sure are 100% fixable because we have seen it as a repeat issue. I'm not 100% sure we won't continue to see special teams issues. I'm not 100% sure we won't continue to see this team be penalized way too much. So that's a bit concerning for sure. But for the most part, I do agree with you. These are things that you don't expect to repeat themselves if the coaching staff is able to get through to the players and teach, you know, throughout the week. And plus some of it is, you know, bad luck, which sounds ridiculous to say, but it is true. There is such a thing as turnover luck, and you would not expect, number one, you wouldn't expect to score the defensive touchdowns that you did against Florida International. And then, you know, it comes back with, you turn it over five times, and every time there was a tip ball that could have been picked off, it pretty much was. And you wouldn't expect for the turnover luck to be, quote, that bad again. So I think that that's something that just by a larger sample size, it's going to work itself out throughout the year, you would expect, and you would hope. So overall, I come out of the game right away. you know, I'm thinking, okay, so how does this, you know, we had this projected as a win to help them get to that bowl game. So you come out of it with, well, changes perception-wise for me as I evaluate the rest of the season, because that's college football by its nature. It's such a compact season. Every game does hold a lot of weight, and every result, win or loss, that's unexpected, has to change some things in your evaluation of a team. So, you know, for me, watching the rest of the Big Ten, I've been, I think the Maryland game is going to be more difficult than initially expected. Rutgers lost Janarian Grant for the season, a very, very big injury blow for them. I think that game might be a little bit, probably about what expected, because their defense appears pretty solid, but offensively they're going to really labor without Janarian Grant. Penn State appears to be an easier game than you would have expected. Purdue is still, they might be a little improved, but they're still fairly a disaster. So you look at it and you say, okay, we've got still an opportunity to get another, we have an expectation of 7 wins and not be called crazy. I think that 6 wins right now looks like something that's very doable. I think 7 wins is doable. Much more than that, you're probably being a bit pie in the sky, but you know, it's still out there for them to get to that 8 wins that we thought was kind of a ceiling. So I think that the offense has proven that they're very capable of putting up big numbers. The defense, I think, is undoubtedly improved. I know that the scoring for Saturday's game, you don't love giving up that many points to Wake Forest, but I don't really blame the defense. They're put into a ton of bad spots, and I thought performed fairly admirably. Not great, but pretty well, and they'll continue to improve, you would think. And it's a big if, they can get healthy along the offensive line, and if we can see Kameon Patrick fully utilized, which he did play on Saturday. It wasn't mentioned on TV, and it, you know, if you weren't really looking for it, you wouldn't have seen it. So they clearly were not ready to unleash him yet and really see what they have there. We hope that it's a big added ingredient for this offense and a big addition. So if we can see that, and if they can clean up some of these, you know, the turnovers and the penalty mistakes, special teams miscues, you know, there's enough there and enough reasons to really still be excited about this team despite the close loss on Saturday, which, you know, it's one you'd love to have back, but you can't have any mulligans. So it takes away some margin for error the rest of the way, but there's still quite a bit to be excited about beginning on Saturday with the Michigan State team that looked very good for one half of football so far this season. They played 3 games. They were outstanding against Notre Dame for charitably 3/4 of that game. But now you kind of wonder, well, what's that really mean? Notre Dame
1-3 Notre Dame, who lost at home to Duke. Yes.
Yes.
And it was they put up 36 points on a Notre Dame defense who saw their defensive coordinator get fired 4 games into the season. So take that for what it's worth.
Exactly. You don't know.
We'll get into Michigan State a little bit later week, and you have no idea. Notre Dame's, you know, it looked like at the time a great win on the road in South Bend until Duke went in there and beat them. And then, you know, you take that and look at Wake Forest, you know, say only beat Duke, it only beat Delaware and Tulane. Well, they beat the team that went up Notre Dame and won. And they beat them at their place. So, you know, we'll see how Wake does. It's a team that, you know, they got NC State this week and then followed up with Syracuse. So, you know, that's a team that could start 6-0. They'll probably go to a bowl game. And, you know, we wish them the best of luck. They played their tails off. They made the plays when they had to. And we'll see how Kevin Wilson's team bounces back this week. Into you know, the Big Ten opener at night against Michigan State. And before we go, TJ, I want to say, go back to the Wilson comments on fan support. last Monday, and I believe I said on the pregame show last week that as a fan, I loved it, and as a writer, there was a part of me that hated it. It was something that could come back to bite you, and I think it all came back to, you know, basically blow up in his face. And I think it's a thing that the Indiana staff need to stop worrying about. As you said, it's something that they can't control. They yep. can't control how many fans buy tickets or how many, you know, fans show up to the games unless they win. And that's the only thing that they need to be focused on is win games. Cause you know, you make comments like that. We need you in the second half. You know, we've been close, and you come out and put together a first half against Wake Forest that, you know, left everybody. They left the field to booze, and they were rightfully booed off the field because nothing went right in that first half except for that first play to Nick Westbrook. So, you know, maybe I don't know for a fact that students left because of those comments, but you saw most of that student section leave after halftime or after the second quarter was complete and didn't come back, even though IU made a furious comeback to try and win the game. And to me, it's I get that it's frustrating not have fans there. You know, the ticket sales were very good last week. The announced crowd was 45,000. So, you know, they're selling tickets now. It's up to just win and to steal, you know, Al Davis and maybe, well, that IU needs to, and, you know, you could talk about selling beer in the stadium, talk about having a mascot and all that stuff. But once you start putting a product that fans could get excited about, and six wins last year was a good start. And it starts again by trying to beat a top 20 opponent next week in Michigan State and start just have something to show for your efforts. So yeah. To me, those comments blew up in his face.
Yeah, I think it's fair to see it that way. I personally, I think that Kevin Wilson could get on the press conference or his radio show and, you know, lie and say, we have the best student section in the Big Ten. I love our students. They're great. We love our fan support, and leave it at that. He could do that and the students wouldn't stay. Their behavior would not be any different. Say, you know, students, we love having you in the first half. If you want to leave at halftime, okay, do whatever you want. And the student behavior would be the same. I know the comments got attention. I don't think they changed behavior. I don't think they did anything other than get talked about. I just don't think that the behavior and the culture is going to change based on any comments. So I would agree with you that it's probably best if, you know, avoid drawing any attention to it. You just don't say anything about it at all. And that it's too bad that it is that way. I wish that, I mean, look, this is a football program that is a whole lot of schools would kill for the program to be as, I will not say successful, but as entertaining as Indiana football is. From a strictly entertainment standpoint, it's a really entertaining product. Not always good, not always well executed, not always winning by any means, but for the most part, competitive and really entertaining. And I think that for a long time I heard, well, you know, if you put an entertaining and competitive product on the field, we'll support it. Well, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think there are a lot of great diehard fans that are going to continue to support. They're going to read our site. They're going to read, you know, all the news they can about it. They're going to watch the games. They're going to go to the games. There's going to, you know, there's a great dedicated section of fans that get dismissed because people just say, oh, Indiana football. Well, nobody cares. No, a lot of people care. It's just, it's a, for the most part, with Indiana football, the culture is, well, distraction until, you know, in between basketball practices. And it's too bad that that's the way that it is, but I think it very clearly is that way, and I don't think any comments would change that one way or the other. So it's probably best to not mention it and go about, you know, just focusing on what you can control on the field and just have kind of an idea of, you know, the people that support us, we love them, and the ones that don't, it's an us against the world mentality. I guess that's kind of the way you need to approach it. And hopefully they get a good crowd on Saturday and they give them something to cheer about and come out with the win against Michigan State, which would be huge. You know, a loss, a win would get you right back on schedule and would be a, I think a win over Michigan State with the loss over Wake Forest would be the, you know, best 3-1 start you could hope for, as opposed to going 3-0 and then losing to Michigan State. I think you'd take the Michigan State win and a 3-1 start that way, but hopefully we get to experience that, get the Spittoon back, and have that kind of catapult your season. If not, you know, after that, you're Columbus, and you're playing the Buckeyes, and then you kind of regroup after that, because that'll be a difficult test. But, you know, we'll deal with the Spartans first, and it's a game that if Indiana plays really well, I do think that they have the opportunity to be in that contest and have a chance. They're going to have to earn it and play really well, but if they do, I think that Michigan State is a team that Indiana can compete with, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's, you're exactly right. It's all hands on deck for Michigan State. A win next week wipes out the loss last week. A note for our fans, we do love our readers, and we appreciate it. So what we're doing, we're having a Hoosier Huddle tailgate on Saturday. I believe we're starting at noon or 1 o'clock. It's in the purple lots on the north side of the stadium. We created a Facebook event. I will put out a tweet with the map of the location. A friend of the show, Brian Tonsoni, is help hosting it. So please come out, talk football with us, enjoy a beverage, you know, a hot dog or hamburger. You know, it'll just be a good time before a big game, and really, you know, soak in that first Big Ten game of the year. So hopefully we'll see you there. Introduce yourselves. And we'd love to meet you. So, but TJ, that does it for today's show. We put a bow on Wake Forest. We'll have the Michigan State game show Wednesday, Thursday this week. Our schedules are kind of wonky this week. You know, we have different issues going on. But we'll definitely have a pregame show. We put out our Know Your Opponent on Michigan State already. It's out this week, or it was out this morning, and it's up on the site. And, you know, just come back, read about the game, learn a little bit about Michigan State, see what IU has to do to win the game, come out victorious, what's a matchup to watch, and some numbers that, you know, matter for people who are into analytics and numbers. But thanks for joining us, TJ. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll talk later in the week.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And I know it's a tough loss, but hang in there. Go Hoosiers, and hopefully they get back on track.
Yep. We'll be back later in the week. Keep coming to HoosierHuddle.com. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Keep an eye out for our tailgate updates. We also have a Facebook event, but I'm not all Facebook friends with everybody on all the IU football fans. But anyway, come out, enjoy the enjoy a beverage, enjoy some food, good company, music, football talk, all that stuff. And we'll see you later in the week. Thanks for listening.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.